I'm Andrew. I work on Bitcoin Core. I'm the maintainer of the Bitcoin Core wallet, and I've been doing this for like 6 years ish, something like that. I'm also the author of BIP174 PSBT and various extensions of that. And also, I co-authored the BIPs for output descriptors.
Exciting times. You've got yourself on. I think you're coming up on a dozen BIPs here, if I've got my count correctly. So you've definitely been prolific in the space. I think most people only have a handful, right?
Well, to be fair, the descriptor BIPs, there's like six of them, which is a little excessive. But they're all describing like the same thing. So they don't really, I don't know if they count separately, but I did write like six of them for the different components of descriptors.
Yeah, well, they got assigned unique IDs, so I guess they're separate.
Yeah, I
So,
guess so.
how did you really come into becoming a protocol level developer? I guess 6 years is an eternity in the Bitcoin space, right? That's about half of the lifetime of the project.
Yeah, so sometime in high school, I learned about Bitcoin from a friend who was using it to buy stuff off the Silk Road, or one of the Silk Road copycats. And while I didn't have any Bitcoin myself, I decided to look into the technology, and like how it worked instead of buying Bitcoin, and so. That's how I got started with like learning about the protocols, all the network stuff, consensus, and all that stuff. I got into development just from, using the software, using different Bitcoin software, finding problems with them, and fixing them. So one of the wallets I used was called Armory, and I started using it because it claimed to be like the most secure, whatever. It was very much not maintained at the point I was using it. And I was running into a lot of problems with it, partially because it was not very maintained. So I contributed fixes. One of the things that Armory did was it relied on Bitcoin Core to do all like the full node stuff. And I was finding incompatibilities between new versions of Bitcoin Core and Armory, and so I would contribute fixes to either one to fix the problems, and that eventually meant I started working on Bitcoin Core more and more, and I've been working on the Bitcoin Core wallet for quite a while now.
Yeah, so I assume, or is it safe to assume, was your first BIP the partially signed Bitcoin transactions?
Yes, it was.
And was that really a result of all of the work you had done on the Bitcoin Core wallet?
Yeah. So it was more related to the hardware wallets stuff. So when I got a hardware wallet at some point, and I wanted to use it with my own full node. And I think the only way at the time to do that was to run your own Electrum server, like Electrum X, and then connect Electrum to that, which is kind of a pain in the ass, not very user friendly. And also, this was before Electrum personal server existed. So like you had to run a full-fledged Electrum server. And I was talking to SIPA about what it would take to get hardware wallet support into Bitcoin Core. And basically, because in Bitcoin Core we don't want to have vendor-specific soft like vendor-specific code in the Bitcoin Core code base itself, we needed to have some external program that would be able to talk to the hardware wallets, translate that into some other protocol language, something that Bitcoin Core could understand, and send it off to Bitcoin Core so that you know, Bitcoin Core could call the external program, which would then talk to hardware wallets, and then vice versa. And so what ended up happening was the way that the external program and Bitcoin Core would communicate became PSBT, and the external program became HWI, the hardware wallet interface that I currently maintain. So that's kind of where PSBT came from, you know, as a need for HWI to be able to interact with Bitcoin Core.
Did HWI come first and it was implementing all the proprietary integration before PSBT was a thing?
I developed them like together. So I was writing HWI and PSBT at the same time. So how HWI would use the information informed how I wrote PSBT, and then how like I had to write PSBT to fit in Bitcoin Core informed how HWI would need to work also. So they were developed like simultaneously.
Gotcha. So, you know, this sounds like it was a fairly long iterative process, right? And this was your first BIP. So can you kind of walk us through that process, you know, going from your initial conceiving, you know, what is the problem and how do we solve it, to really getting to the point where you have rough consensus for this, you know, new way of having hardware wallets communicate with software wallets?
Yeah, so the main thing was that I got a working implementation as like before I submitted the BIP to the mailing list. So obviously the BIP is just a document, and that had to be written, which was, you know, it's not that hard to write a document, especially if you just use it for your own note taking while you experiment with stuff. So that's what I did. I wrote the BIP as I was experimenting, kept changing things. You know, it was kind of my notes document until I cleaned it up at the end for submitting to the mailing list. And you know, when I posted the email to the mailing list, it was the BIP document, all the stuff I'd written up. And I also had a reference implementation to Bitcoin Core, and then my HWI implementation as like a client. Like, so there were two software implementations, and I was able to test off of each other. So I could make sure that Bitcoin Core could send to HWI, HWI could send to Bitcoin Core, and there were no incompatibilities there.
So you took the Satoshi route. Did you have to convince yourself that it would work first by writing the code?
Yeah, I am somewhat of a perfectionist, so I would be like, this has to work before I even tell anyone about it, other than the people I'm working with directly. You know, before it goes public, it has to be perfect. That's what I was going for, at least. Didn't really happen that way. But yeah, the eventually, like, when I posted it to the mailing list, I basically got crickets. Like, no one said anything for like 6 months. And then one day I learned that ColdCard was going to be using it. And that was the first time I heard anyone really say anything about PSBT. Like, it was like months after I posted it to the mailing list. Yeah. Initially there weren't really any comments, but as people, especially after ColdCard, like, said they were going to be using PSBT, I started getting more comments then. It just seemed like maybe it wasn't on anyone's radar.
Yeah. So do you feel like it was kind of like, you know, the old proverbial snowball rolling down the hill? It just took a while to get started, but then, you know, once you started getting some velocity and some buy-in from other manufacturers in the space, then it really started to solidify.
Yeah, I think there was quite a bit of that. I feel like there was probably a bit of the whole, like, yet another standard thing, because it definitely did feel like there were a lot of different competing formats for a shared transaction thing, and you know, PSBT was just yet another one. Except if you look at the BIPs repository, PSBT is the only one there. Actually, that's not true. There's BIP 10, which is similar and does almost the same thing, but not quite. It's also withdrawn. So, like of the other formats that were being used at the time, I think PSBT ended up being the only one with a BIP number, which might also just be because it was the only one that anyone decided to write a BIP for and ask for a BIP number, because that's also something that happens.
So it looks like you originally created the BIP July 2017. So I see it's considered as final now, but I think there was a pretty long time in the interim there. As you said, you know, for the first 6 months, there was really no feedback. And then I believe, you know, there was a fair amount of back and forth with some interested parties kind of on some trivial aspects of it, so that it did have a few updates before it was finalized, right?
Yes. So there was, it was on the mailing list for a while, and then eventually I opened up the pull request to the BIPs repo, and that's where it got the number. And then, like, sometime after that, I got more comments on the mailing list. And there were a couple revisions. I think I added a few fields, but I didn't, like, and I kind of, I think I just redefined some parts of it. It didn't really change the serialization, but it changed how the serialization should be thought about, like the mental model. But for the most part, I think a lot of what I originally did survived the revisions. And it's now marked as final because it's in use by a lot of different software. So changing it now, like changing it fundamentally now, would be a major problem, which is why it's considered final.
Gotcha. So, you know, it sounds like you were fortunate in the sense that this was not a particularly contentious issue. It sounds like probably the biggest contention was more around fatigue of, you know, the, you know, yet another standard for, you know, ways to pass this data around, even though there wasn't really an all-encompassing standard at all, I would say, before this. Do you have experience working on many other software projects? The reason that I ask is, you know, do you think that there are some major, you know, structural differences between developing for the Bitcoin ecosystem versus your more standard software?
So I don't really have any experience with other open source projects. I have like perused some of how they work. I think the one I'm most familiar with would be Python and their Python enhancement proposal. I think that's what it stands for, which BIPs are actually modeled off of, I think. But I mean, like with Python, you know, a major difference there is that they have a benevolent dictator for life, right? It's completely centralized. And in Bitcoin, we don't have that. So I don't really have much experience with that, though.
Yeah, it does seem to be one really major structural difference. I think, you know, even with a lot of free open source projects, there's inevitably someone at the top of some structure that can make decisions and kind of move things along. Whereas, you know, in the Bitcoin space, you have to have a really low time preference. You have to be really patient. And, you know, there is this kind of additional issue, I guess, of having to be your own advocate, you know, having to drum up support or interest in a thing, you know, even if you may have a perfectly valid, great idea and implementation, if you don't have buy-in from people, because really, you know, the default is apathy, and Yeah, it's one of the great strengths of Bitcoin, I think, and why it is so resilient against things, because you generally don't have to do anything in order to resist pressure of different types. Apathy is very, it's a core strength, I guess, of the system and the game theory. But apathy with people who are trying to develop and evolve the system can certainly be a major frustration. There are certainly plenty of Bitcoin developers who have spent a lot of time and resources creating things that ended up, not being adopted for one reason or another. Kind of, along a more specific route, have you paid much attention to the controversy around the Czech template verify BIP lately?
Yeah, well, pay attention is a strong word. I have looked at it and also have ignored it. I'm aware of it.
Yeah, so there we go. Apathy once again. I won't put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you aren't necessarily totally against it, but I guess you just don't find it interesting enough to spend your time and resources trying to move that along the process.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So Bitcoin is built around this idea of consensus and trustlessness, which, well, that may be a loaded word. We may say trust minimization. How do we achieve this technical consensus around BIPs while keeping that principle held true? I know that a lot of people who don't participate in these processes may look at it from a really high level and say, oh, that's centralized gatekeeping process. How would you push back on that and basically make the argument that the BIP process is imbued in the important principles of Bitcoin?
Yeah, so BIPs are, it might seem like they're centralized. There's, there's like one BIP editor, maybe two. For the most part, there's one BIP editor. There's only one repo, and BIPs get assigned numbers. But actually, BIPs are pretty decentralized. An important thing is that just because a BIP has a number and is in the BIPs repo doesn't mean it's a good idea. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be deployed. There's a lot of withdrawn BIPs. There's a lot of rejected BIPs. There's a lot of BIPs that are dumb. A BIP, in order for a BIP to get a number, it just needs to follow the formatting, and it needs to be like possible to implement, even if it's not a good idea. So it's not really centralization, because anyone can submit a BIP, anyone can open a PR against the BIPs repo, and if their BIP follows all the formatting guidelines and it is possible to implement, easiest way to show possible to implement is to just have a reference implementation. As long as that's possible, then it gets a BIP number. So the BIPs repo is really just a convenient place to have technical documentation about ideas for Bitcoin. And the numbers are just a convenient identifier to refer to things, instead of having to say the BIP for partially signed Bitcoin transactions. You can say BIP 174. So, the BIPs is more of a convenience thing rather than any form of centralization.
I gotta say, I'm not a real big fan on the number process. Maybe I'm slightly dyslexic or something, but I often have to go and look up, unless it's one of the like top five most commonly referenced BIPs, I usually don't know what it is. And kind of to your point that just because there's a BIP, it's not necessarily a good idea. I don't remember when this happened, but this may be a surprise to a number of people who are listening, but BIP 39, which is basically describing seed phrases. It turns out it's actually unanimously discouraged.
I wouldn't say unanimously, but it is. A lot of people don't like it. But you might also notice there are no BIPs for any alternatives. So it gets used kind of by default. I'd say it's more of a network effect, right? If something has a BIP number and it's in the BIPs repo, that means it's easy to reference and easy to find, which means it's more likely to be used. So BIP39, even though a lot of people don't like it, it still ends up being used because it has a BIP number, it's in the BIPs repo, other software are using it, and it's easy to reference. There are alternatives to BIP39, like the thing that Electrum does. But, if I just search for the thing that Electrum does, it's not very specific. And also, finding the documentation to that is non-trivial, because it's not a BIP, so there's no number, no easy number to reference. And because it's not a BIP, it's not in the BIPs repo, so it's not just something I can pull up. I have to go digging through Electrum's documentation to figure out what their seed phrase thing is.
I've always found it odd that Electrum devs have, been very confident in stating that, their seed phrase paradigm is superior, and yet it's not a BIP. You think they would want to push forward to get the rest of the world on board with it.
Yeah, that is kind of a problem I have with a lot of other Bitcoin software projects and companies. It's like they will say, oh, here's a standard and we should all use this. But then they won't submit a BIP. And so finding the standard is very difficult. As a different example, there's Stratum, which is a widely used protocol. I'm sure it's specified somewhere, but I couldn't tell you where that is. And it does have BIP numbers, but the BIPs are not written. So if you look at BIP 40 and 41, these are numbers allocated for Stratum. They were allocated in like 2012. And there's just no documents.
So to be clear, the BIP editor, Luke, has allocated those numbers. So they didn't, this wasn't an instance of them going rogue and allocating their own numbers, which is definitely a no-no.
Yeah. So at the time, Greg Maxwell was the BIP editor. And I only know this because I answered a Stack Exchange question asking about this. So I followed up with Luke. And Greg Maxwell said, you can take the numbers 40 through 49. 10 BIP numbers should be enough for anyone. And then they took 40 and 41 and just never wrote the documents, I guess. This was supposedly some conversation on IRC in 2012. The process was like, Slush wrote the Stratum protocol, wrote documentation for it. And then people said, this should be a BIP. So he went to Greg Maxwell saying, let's get BIP numbers or something. Or maybe someone went to him and said, Greg went to him and said, you can have these BIP numbers. But they just never wrote the documentation for it. So I don't think this happens anymore. To get a BIP number, you have to have a document. But there are a few examples of BIP numbers being allocated before documentation is written.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see the historical evolution of various aspects of Bitcoin, and not always necessarily the software, right? You're familiar with a lot of the digging that I've done into historical versions of running the Bitcoin core nodes, and sometimes it's fun to poke around in those really old commits and proposed changes, especially, I think BIP 01, which was the original description of BIP, was authored in September of 2011. So really, you know, anything that happened before 2011, it definitely didn't go through the BIP process, right? Yeah. How would you describe that? Of course, in the early days, I guess it was Satoshi decree, but there had to be some sort of intermediary period there, right?
Yeah, so my understanding is that a lot of the discussion at that time took place on the Bitcoin.org forum, now known as Bitcoin Talk. And there's a lot of stuff you can learn just by looking through all those old topics. They're all still there. You can find discussions from all the developers from back then, from even including Satoshi. The only problem is Bitcoin Talk is like impossible to search. So finding those discussions is pretty difficult, but once you can find them, like, there, a lot of stuff happened on Bitcoin Talk. Also, funny thing about just searching through old commits, it's always, if you git blame the Bitcoin repo and you get back to a commit that's authored by S. Nakamoto, you will rarely figure out why the hell it was written, because Satoshi didn't write commit messages.
Oh dear. Kind of along that same vein, do you have any idea of how much of Satoshi's original code is still left in the repo?
I found a few lines here and there. I don't know. I mean, I recently found a line that dated back to the first commit, which was quite the adventure, because I still don't know why it exists. Well, yeah, there's quite a bit of there's still quite a bit of code. Not a whole lot, but there's lines here and there that they might not have been written directly by Satoshi, but you can see the evolution of just, like, you know, a new interface was added, and so this line had to change to fit that interface, but it still does exactly the same thing as it did when Satoshi wrote it. So it's not like actual Satoshi code, but things that are functionally the same and, like, very close in code.
Gotcha. What do you believe is the biggest misconception that people may have about the Bitcoin improvement proposal process?
I really think it has to be the idea that BIP number means anything. Like, going back to the thing I was talking about with a number, having a BIP number doesn't mean it's a good idea. Like, people will be like, oh, it has a BIP number, so that means it's a good idea. But no, that's not what it means. I think that's still one of the biggest.
Surely BIP 42 is an exception to that.
BIP 42. Oh, that was the April Fool's joke. I guess it's still serious.
It is dead serious, Andrew. It's not a joke.
Yes, it's very serious. Yeah, and I think another misconception is, like, that there is a process for accepting and deploying BIPs. So I recently got an email from someone that also emailed like 80 people or something, complaining or asking questions about the BIP process, And like, one of the things that jumped out to me was that he said BIP committee. I'm like, there isn't one. That's not how BIPs work. There isn't a committee for acceptance. There isn't a committee that determines what should be deployed or used or whatever. Even just having a BIP number, it's not even down to the BIP editor. It's up to everyone that uses Bitcoin as to whether they want a BIP to be used. Like, just talking generally, because there's a lot of BIPs that aren't consensus related. So, like PSBT, it's not consensus related. It's up to the community to see that BIP 174 exists. And if wallet developers think it's a good idea and they start implementing it, that's how a BIP like that gets used. So it's up to everyone, really, for a BIP to become accepted.
Yeah, so on the flip side, do you think that BIPs are necessary. So we've already, we talked a little bit about the fact that, there is certain wallet software that has their own standards they haven't made BIPs for. We're even seeing folks like, Greenpeace, for example, I think had a whole change the code campaign, but I haven't seen them submitting BIPs. So, perhaps they're trying to go a different route there, kind of like back in the scaling debates. Not everybody who wanted to do different scaling-based forks bothered to create BIPs, right?
Actually, there were many scaling-based forks. I think.
Yeah, I think there were 4 or 5, and like.
No, there's like 10 of them. So 100 through 109 are all hard forks for increasing the block size, and I think a couple of them became Bitcoin Cash. So that's like.
I was trying to remember if
something that happened. I think that was BIP 102, wasn't it?
There's so many, it's hard to keep track.
I'm pretty sure it was BIP 102. It's not very well written. but yeah, so I would say that BIPs are, in the current world of Bitcoin, I think BIPs are necessary. BIPs are an important coordination mechanism, kind of. Not for soft forks, well, even for soft forks, but BIPs help everyone who uses Bitcoin to coordinate on the same protocols. As an example, Glozow has submitted a BIP for package relay, and this is something that affects a lot of different software, a lot of different wallets, different node implementations. And so everyone, in order to implement this package relay feature, has to agree on how network messages should be sent, how to indicate that this feature is supported, and all that. And BIPs help everyone come to agreement on what to do. So having, I guess it's more of a artifact of having documentation, but having documentation like that is ostensibly independent of any software implementation is necessary, just so that all the different things that use Bitcoin can come to the same thing and agree on the same thing and not end up being unable to communicate with each other.
So are you working on any BIPs at the moment that we don't know about?
Maybe. Well, you probably do know about it. So Miniscript is a thing that Sipa, Sanke, and Andrew Polstra have been working on, and actually quite a number of other people, I think. But it doesn't have a BIP yet. It's not really being used. Well, it might be used by some people. But the goal is to have the Miniscript specification, which right now is just a website, but to have a BIP for that. And I suspect that I will have to be the one that writes it, because it doesn't seem like anyone really wants to or has the time to. So that might be a BIP we will see in the near future. But other than that, I'm not really working on anything else. My current focus is trying to get the existing BIPs implemented. So I have some PSBT extensions that need to be implemented into Bitcoin Core. And that's what I've been working on.
Fair enough. Have you participated much in, I guess, mentoring or talking to people who are new to Bitcoin development?
Yeah, I have. I've been talking to several new contributors. I'm working. I'm also a mentor with the Summer of Bitcoin, where we get students from around the world, and they do an internship working on Bitcoin things. Yeah.
So, what would you tell new contributors about, you know, how they should think of BIPs, or, you know, what decision-making process should they go through to even decide if embarking on BIP creation and, you know, advocating for their BIP to, you know, achieve consensus for it becoming a standard? You know, what advice would you give to people who've never been through that process?
I would say the first thing is, like, make sure that writing a BIP makes sense for whatever it is. So ideally, a BIP should be something that will be used by many, many different software, and they need coordination on how to agree on something. And so a BIP should be something that is, you know, implementation agnostic and is expected to be used by a lot of different people, and used by, you know, people you aren't expecting to be using it. So, you know, that's the first step. Make sure that writing a BIP makes sense. So for some things, this is really easy to determine. Like, if it's a consensus change, you kind of need to have coordination, so a BIP makes sense. If it's a network protocol change, also you need coordination with other node implementations, so writing a BIP there makes sense. Wallet stuff, it depends on whether you're targeting cross-compatibility between wallets, or you want there to be compatibility between wallets. Then for the BIP itself, I would say it's pretty simple. BIP2 is the current BIP that specifies how BIPs work. And it's pretty specific. And it just, like, tells you exactly how the BIP should be formatted, just for, like, the basic formatting and acceptance stuff. So following BIP2 will get you close enough, I guess. The last thing is to have a working implementation that can be used as the reference implementation. So this is in part to help you know that the idea will work if you don't implement it. So a lot of times ideas don't make it past implementation, just because you realize, oh, when I implement this, actually the whole thing explodes. So maybe it's not a good idea in practice. So having an implementation is really useful, especially with when discussing with people. And having use cases is a pretty big thing. Like, you can have the best idea in the world, and if it doesn't have a use, then it's kind of useless. So having use cases for whatever is going to be a BIP is also something to consider. And for writing the BIP itself, my favorite thing to do is to take a BIP that I like, that, like, I thought was well written, and to copy its formatting. So a lot of my BIPs, I think I stole the formatting from the Bash32 BIP, because I liked the way it was formatted, and it was easy to write it like that.
I think theft is highly highly appropriate in the free open source software development space.
Yeah. Yeah. I personally find that the way that SIPA writes BIPs he writes them very well. So I tend to borrow formatting ideas from him.
Standing upon the shoulders of giants.
Yes.
Let's see. I mean, we've been 5 minutes here. John, do you think it's about time for audience Q&A? See if anybody has any super nerdy questions.
Yeah, Sounds good to me. If anybody in the audience has a question, feel free to hit the request button. While we're waiting on folks, one question I have is that, I mean, with Bitcoin, you at least theoretically can run whatever software you want to run. Is there any sort of downfall to releasing your own implementation of a BIP without going through any sort of process? Like, say you have an idea, you just implement it and try to connect to the Bitcoin Core protocol. Is there anything that can go wrong with that?
So if you're implementing consensus things, one of the biggest issues is that you have to be bug for bug compatible. Otherwise you might end up, on the wrong chain or disconnected from the network entirely. The unfortunate thing is that there are still several behaviors that are not well documented. So there are some network things that if you implement it incorrectly, you might end up just forcibly disconnected by whatever peer you've connected to. And this is mostly related to denial of service protections. So we have a number of protections that are just like, if the peer is sending us spam, we kick them out. And if you're on your own and you're implementing everything from scratch or something like that, that's definitely something to be aware of. You might just accidentally do something that ends up getting you disconnected. Although now it used to be disconnect and then banned, so the node would not allow you to reconnect to them. But we've mostly removed a lot of the banning behavior because it is also not good for the network to just ban peers that might be accidentally misbehaving. A lot of BIPs, a lot of BIPs are implemented independently. I know there are several BIP32 implementations. I know there are several PSBT implementations that like people will tell me, oh, our software or whatever is using PSBT. I'm like, cool, I didn't know that. And what library did you use? And usually they wrote it themselves because there isn't really a PSBT library.
I think it really comes down to is whatever you're implementing an externally facing thing, right? If you're doing wallet stuff, if it's like related to how you're managing your keys or UTXOs or whatever, like the rest of the network doesn't really care about that as long as when you're trying to spend, you're broadcasting a transaction that's considered valid by the other nodes on the network. Related to that though, like let's take for example Merch's branch and bound UTXO selection algorithm. Why or why not do you think it would be appropriate to have a BIP for that?
That's a good question. I think so. It could go both ways. It might not be relevant for a BIP because you don't need coordination with anyone else. Like, it's not something that affects anyone else. It's not something that really affects anyone else. It's not something that someone else needs to do for something to work. So it's not like, it's not really something that requires coordination among different software for it to be implemented and used to be useful rather. At the same time, it's also a good idea. So maybe it should be, I don't know. As I said before, the bar for a BIP number is not very high. So, someone could write a BIP for the branch and band algorithm and I would not be opposed to it, but I would not write one because I don't think it's appropriate for a BIP.
Fair enough.
That makes sense. It reminds me of I was a reporter covering a political campaign, and the mayor used to always tell me, you know, anybody with $12 can file, but not everybody's going to get chosen. A lot of these systems are very open for participation, but ultimately there's a culling process that takes place. This question came in through chat. So to what degree does the BIP process rely on development on other chains? A little bit of a controversial question.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that there have been BIPs written. I'm fairly certain there have been BIPs written based on things that were implemented on other chains, and vice versa. Other chains implement BIPs written for Bitcoin, but weren't, well, even also were deployed on Bitcoin, like Litecoin implemented SegWit before, or deployed SegWit before Bitcoin did. And that was just a Bitcoin BIP. So if this does happen, it's not that transparent. And I don't think anyone would really care either way. It's not like if an idea is good, it doesn't matter where it came from. So if it came from another chain and it's still a good idea, great.
So I guess it's not always necessarily just another chain. So I know, for example, there are Slips, right? Which is like the Satoshi Labs, their own BIPs, if you were, which I guess are more things that are mostly internal processes to stuff that they're doing with Trezor. I think there's a few other companies. I mean, obviously we have Bolts for Lightning, and I think some of the Lightning implementations have their own improvement proposals as well. So, you know, it's always possible that there could be some cross-pollination there of, you know, manufacturers or companies that have their own improvement proposals that may implement something that seems interesting enough to get done at a protocol level.
Yeah, I think, there's just Slips. Although I believe Slips are, they include a lot of altcoin-related things, if I remember correctly, because Trezor deals with altcoins. Bolts are a separate set of documents. I think there was some talk about writing BIPs for the Bolts, but I don't know where that discussion went. I do know that in Blockstream we have, or will have, Elements improvement proposals for the Element sidechain. So there could be things, you know, things that come from there that end up as BIPs. But
so are those EIPs or ELIPs?
I think they're ELIPs. I don't know.
I think, yeah, EIPs could get a little confusing.
Yeah, EIP would definitely be confusing. I think they're ELIP or ELIP.
Gotcha. Those are all the questions that have come up, and I know we're running low on time. Before we close out, Jameson, Andrew, do you have any final thoughts?
Having never actually really participated in the BIP process, not too much, though it has, I think, always felt like it would be really challenging to go through. I think that that's one of the big misconceptions that hopefully Andrew has been able to convince some people otherwise, where, you know, if you start reading through all this stuff, it can certainly look overwhelming and challenging. But on the flip side, it's pretty low risk. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? The worst that could happen is you don't even get assigned a BIP number, but, you know, once you do get assigned a BIP number, there's a million other points along the way where you might find yourself basically getting stalled out, but at the very least there will be a historical archive that you tried.
Yeah. And you know, if you're interested in the BIPs, in the BIPs, there's the BIPs repo. And if you're interested in like upcoming things that might be BIPs or participating in discussions about BIPs and, you know, proposing changes to BIPs, most of that happens on the Bitcoin Dev mailing list. So, you know, you could join the mailing list and participate. It's open access. Anyone can read it. Anyone can send to it. So all of this stuff happens in the open.
Awesome. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Jameson. And thank you to everyone for joining us. All you shattery super coders, get to working on your BIPs. And for the rest of us, don't trust, verify. Take care, everyone.